Hello, welcome to the latest episode of British History, Royals, Rebels, and Romantics, the podcast for people who understand that history shows us what's possible for us in our lives today. I'm Carol Ann Lloyd, your host and tour guide as we travel back in time. We're shaking up history to look at the stories that don't always make the history books, to consider famous and infamous characters in new and interesting ways, and to look for all the things that we share, even when we're living in different times and places. I hope you enjoy this journey through the royals, rebels, and romantics of Britain. Now, let's explore history together. In September 2020, the government of the United Kingdom instituted the Rule of Six to attempt to mitigate the spread of coronavirus. It means that, with a few specific exceptions, it is illegal to gather in groups larger than six. This created some wonderful memes featuring images of the six wives of Henry VIII smiling happily, because when they gather together, there is no room for the king. It echoes the creative team behind the musical Six, a retelling of the story in fun rather than historical ways. Each wife gets a turn to tell her story. There are references to the man who brings them together, but he never gets to appear on stage. Once again, no room for Henry. Of course, it's all fanciful and fun rather than accurate, but it does invite us to think about these women as individuals, each fascinating in her own way. And it raises the question, what are the secrets, or at least the lesser-known facts, of each of the six wives of Henry VIII? Let's see what we can learn. Catherine of Aragon. Fun fact, Catherine was betrothed to Prince Arthur at age 3. 20 years later, she married Henry VIII. Of course, there was a long betrothal, then a marriage to Arthur, and off-again, on-again betrothal to Henry while Henry VII lived. But all in all, it's a long time to wait to marry Henry VIII. Catherine was a strong woman in her own right. This wasn't a secret. Catherine was named ambassador for the Spanish court in England in 1507, making her the first female ambassador in European history. Later, Henry appointed Catherine as his regent in 1513 when he went to war in France. This was especially important as England was at war with Scotland at the time. It's a clear indication of how much Henry valued Catherine's ideas and experience early in their marriage. After the one-sided English victory, Catherine reportedly wanted to send Henry the head of defeated King James IV of Scotland, but settled for sending his coat, covered in blood, instead. Catherine was very much her mother's daughter. Henry VIII failed to recognize this at his cost. His first wife was descended from Isabella of Castile. Isabella fought for the throne of Castile, reorganized the government, and was recognized, along with Ferdinand, as Catholic monarchs, implying equality in power. Despite what's seen as a successful marriage, Isabella insisted that the kingdom of Castile pass not to Ferdinand, but to her daughter Juana at her death. Catherine wasn't just married to Henry for longer than any other wife. She was married to him for 25 years, which was nearly twice as long as he was married to his next wives combined. 14 years for the next five. So Catherine knew Henry well. She probably knew him better than anyone. She had known him as a young king, fit, healthy, full of potential, and charming. She was Henry's last link with the promise of his youth and the last person to love him unconditionally. In Catherine's final letter to the king, her final words are that she desires to see him more than anything else. What does she see in Henry after everything he's done to her that inspires her to continue to want to be part of his life? That personal statement that her eyes desire to see him isn't about being queen. It's about Henry. She wants Henry in her life. I think her biggest secret is why. What makes her feel that way about him right up to the end? Anne Boleyn. Censorship alert. Anne is known to have owned illegal books, including a copy of William Tyndale's English New Testament and Tyndale's The Obedience of a Christian Man. The story goes that Anne loaned The Obedience to one of her ladies-in-waiting, who was so interested in reading it that she didn't pay enough attention to the young man who was courting her. So he playfully took the book away. Later, he was reading it, and the dean caught him. Knowing Cardinal Wolsey would use the book against her, Anne went to the king and shared the book with him, pointing out key passages she knew he would like, such as those saying that the king's law was God's law. Henry approved, and Anne continued to share her illegal books and reformist ideas with the king. Many of the secrets surrounding Anne Boleyn have to do with her fall. Why did she fall so quickly? From sitting next to the king at the May Day joust in 1536, she would be arrested the next day, tried and convicted over a couple of weeks, and dead on May 19th. Who was behind that? Did Cromwell take her out to save himself? Did Henry take her out to move on to Jane Seymour? Most people agree she wasn't guilty, but Anne had become reckless in her speech, and Henry Norris was the worst possible partner to have a scandalous conversation with. Norris was groom of the stool, so the thought of the two of them laughing at the king would have been enough to convince Henry to move against her. And finally, why was she executed with a sword? Anne was sentenced to be burned or beheaded at the king's pleasure. Henry showed mercy to Anne and the five men included in her fall, offering them the less painful death of beheading. But for Anne, it was to be the French executioner and the sword, rather than the English executioner and the block and axe. The famous swordsman of Calais was sent for before Anne was found guilty, the verdict being a foregone conclusion. I think Henry wanted the sword and the expert to prevent the horrors of a botched execution. Imagine a Queen of England being butchered in the way that Margaret, Countess of Salisbury, would be 5 years later. Such a spectacle, with the executioner needing several blows to complete the job. In the death of a queen, even one who had fallen from grace, would have reflected badly on the king. Instead, Anne's execution was swift and clean, and Henry was free to move on. Of course, Anne's greatest secret was Elizabeth, who would live to take the throne and outshine Henry's other children. Many consider Elizabeth the greatest Tudor monarch and one of the greatest queens of all time. Jane Seymour. Although we don't know exactly when Henry began courting Jane Seymour, he was openly doing so by the spring of 1536, after Anne's miscarriage. It's impossible to know for sure when the king decided to get rid of Anne Boleyn, but whenever that was, Jane's brothers were at her side, encouraging and coaching her. When the king sent Jane a gift of gold and a letter, she received it publicly, and then publicly kissed and returned it to the messenger, asking him to take it back to the king and tell the king there was no treasure she valued as much as her honor. Then she said if the king wished to make her a gift of money, she asked that he would do so at that time, that God would be pleased to send her a good marriage. The king was charmed, as he was intended to be. Keep in mind, Jane was no innocent young maiden. She was a woman in her mid-20s, a member of an ambitious family who were playing this game to win. And win Jane did. Henry and Jane became formally betrothed the day after Anne's execution, and they were married 10 days later. Jane chose bound to obey and serve as her motto. But she was not without her own agenda, and she clashed with the king. When Jane petitioned for Princess Mary to return to court, Henry told her to concentrate on her own children, a bit harsh since she hadn't managed to become pregnant yet. Then when she knelt and pleaded that the king forgive the rebels from the Pilgrimage of Grace, Henry responded angrily that she should never meddle with his affairs, and warned her to remember what had happened to her predecessor. So it wasn't quite the perfect marriage we sometimes think. All was forgiven in October 1537, when Jane gave birth to a boy. The baby was fine, but something went wrong after the birth, and Jane died a few days later. This sealed her place in Henry's affection. Anne of Cleves. Anne was the only one to experience Henry without all his kingly glory and without knowing he was the king. When they first met, Henry dressed up as a messenger and tried to get Anne's attention, seeing before her a large, smelly servant. Anne dismissed him and kept watching the festivities. When the messenger came up and kissed her, Anne pushed him away. Of course she did. She was about to marry a very jealous king whose temper was well known. She had been raised in a strict environment, and kissing someone you didn't know was scandalous. Unfortunately for her, this messenger was the king. He never got over her initial, unguarded, and unfiltered reaction. So Anne definitely had a secret. She knew what Henry was really like. And since Henry couldn't get out of the wedding, she ended up with an even bigger secret. What happened on the wedding night? Henry said he found her so unappealing, he couldn't seal the deal, so to speak. But only Anne and Henry know what really happened. He later accused her of not being a virgin and having a flabby body and evil smells. It's true there was someone in that bed who was not a virgin and had a flabby body with evil smells, but it wasn't Anne of Cleves. And Anne knew what really happened between them. This probably worked in her favor when Henry decided to end the marriage. Only 6 months in, Anne was told the king believed their marriage to be void because of her pre-contract with the Duke of Lorraine. That's why he couldn't do his husbandly business at night. This pre-contract wasn't something new. It had already been addressed. Anne could have objected, but she was pragmatic enough to realize it would be a losing battle. She agreed to the king's terms. In response, Henry was extremely generous, and Anne became a very wealthy woman who was also welcome at court. She was in favor with the king the rest of his life, and she became friendly with Mary and Elizabeth as well. She outlived Henry and Edward VI, participated in Mary I's coronation, and was buried with honor at Westminster Abbey during Mary's reign. In many ways, it seems Anne held the secret to being a successful wife of Henry VIII. Get out fast. Catherine Howard. Catherine lived barely long enough for us to know her at all. Even the date of her birth is a question, although it's thought to be about 1524 or 25. When her mother died, she was sent to live with Agnes, Dowager Duchess of Norfolk. This placed her in the path of two men, Henry Mannix and Francis Durham. Mannix was her music teacher and took advantage of her youth, she was probably 12 or 13, to have some kind of physical relationship. Later, Durham and Catherine probably did sleep together, entering into a sort of betrothal and reportedly calling each other husband and wife. When Catherine caught the eye of the king, she kept the past a secret. People tell different versions of Catherine's story. One was that she was a seductress, enjoying a physical relationship with Mannix and Durham before setting her sights on the king. Once she had charmed and captivated him, she did everything in her power to keep him, trying to hide a past she knew would disqualify her in his eyes. Another story paints her as a young teenage girl who was taken advantage of by Mannix and probably Durham as well. Once Henry saw her, he fell in love. Young and innocent, Catherine assumed that since Henry was God's chosen king, he knew everything, including her past, and was willing to take her anyway. Henry created his own story. Remember, in early 1540, he had believed he could burst in on Anne of Cleves in disguise and sweep her off her feet with his royal personality and presence. After that failed, he turned to a teenager to restore his faith in himself. The king adored Catherine and showered her with gifts and attention. In return, he expected her to make him the man he wanted to be. Without the royal upbringing of Catherine of Aragon, without the education and intelligence of her cousin Anne Boleyn, without the family mentoring of Jane Seymour, without the pragmatism of Anne of Cleves, Catherine Howard was alone. She didn't know how to manage the factions at court. When people from her past showed up expecting favors, she started giving them positions. Her closest friend seemed to be Jane Rochford, a woman with a complicated past who seemed to have encouraged Catherine to be with Thomas Culpeper during her marriage to the king. Catherine couldn't sustain the king's image of her because it was never about her. It was about him. She wasn't his rose without a thorn. She was a very young woman thrown into a court full of intrigue, and she wasn't able to survive. Only Catherine knows her real story. That's a secret we have yet to learn. Catherine Parr. One of Catherine Parr's secrets has to do with people's misguided assumption that because she was twice widowed by the time she married the king, she must have been matronly and sedate. Not so. She was around 30 and enjoyed her time in Tudor Court society. She loved clothes, jewels, and intelligent conversations. And after being widowed twice, she was ready to marry for love. Catherine's love at the time was not Henry VIII. Sorry, Henry. Instead, after two for-duty marriages, Catherine had fallen in love with Thomas Seymour. She wrote to Seymour that she had wanted, quote, to marry you before any man I knew. However, she caught the king's eye, and she chose duty once more, explaining her intention to, quote, renounce utterly mine own will and to follow his, God's, most willingly. Catherine's full devotion to her faith was a secret she had to keep somewhat from the king. It's quite possible to see her words to Seymour as an intention to tip the king into further religious reform. The political commitment to reform had stalled with Cromwell's death, and Catherine may have seen her role as queen as a way to get it going again. But as time went on, religious discussions with the king proved problematic for her and almost ended her marriage and possibly her life. Concerned about the accession of Edward as a child as the king grew more sick, and realizing the possibility that Catherine would have a strong influence on the next reign, Bishop Gardiner moved against her. He suggested to the king that Catherine was a heretic. Catherine was warned by her physician, who somehow found or perhaps was given a paper outlining this plot. The queen hastened to show her support and devotion to the king, explaining that those religious debates that were so lively were simply intended to take his mind off his pain. Catherine assured him she would be pleased to be instructed by him. Catherine's secret love for Thomas Seymour was realized shortly after the king's death when she married for the fourth time. Tragically, that marriage was not without its controversies and secrets. What really happened with the teenage Elizabeth when Catherine joined Thomas in that horseplay? Why was Elizabeth sent to live with Antony and Joan Denny? We don't know. Sadly, Catherine died in September 1548 after giving birth to her only child. The person who might be able to fill in some of the secrets of the six wives for us is Anne Herbert, Countess of Pembroke. Born in 1515, she served all six wives. She became a maid of honor to Catherine of Aragon in 1528. She continued that role for Anne Boleyn, embracing Anne's interest in the new faith. After Anne Boleyn's fall, Anne remained in the service of Jane Seymour and was one of the few women present at the baptism of Prince Edward. She married Sir William Herbert in 1538 and returned to court to be in the household of Anne of Cleves, which quickly became the household of Catherine Howard. Finally, Anne Herbert was a witness to the wedding of Henry VIII and Catherine Parr in 1543. Catherine Parr's royal household may have been Anne Herbert's favorite royal assignment, since Catherine Parr was her sister. So she served all five wives and then saw her sister become number six. The only person known to have served all six wives, I bet she would have some exciting secrets to share. Thank you for joining us in uncovering some of the secrets of the six wives. Join us next time as we continue our Tudor Tango and look at some of the biggest scandals in Tudor England. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please share with a friend. Do send any questions or comments. I'd love to hear from you where we should explore next. And please subscribe and leave a review. I'd really appreciate it. I'm so glad we could explore history together. Till next time.